It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
Are the Bears the worst team in the NFC North? Was the takeaway of every NFC North team improving to five wins mean the Bears at 4-2 are somehow in the dungeon? Can you make a case that the Bears are better than the Lions, the Vikings, or the Packers?
Not yet. I think that that will be forthcoming. I don't know that we will ever be making a case that they are better, but I do believe that we don't know yet. At this point, yeah, they're the team that that has four wins and everyone else has five. They are a winning team, but how do you rate their victories in terms of the quality of the opponent, all that stuff? They somehow are indeed in the dungeon because everyone else has a win more than them. But that doesn't mean that they're a bad team, and it doesn't mean they can't beat some of their division opponents. They haven't played them yet. So I think that the hope is that the Bears are building, and the hope is that they are improving while they're doing so. And I think there's a lot to like about what the Bears have done, but no, they have not made the kind of strides as the other teams in their division has done yet. So the good news is that there are 17 games, and you will have a conclusion and knowledge of this by the end of the season, and mercifully they get to play each of these teams twice. So when you talk about division games, you have sort of the basic idea that your familiarity with them helps you to be able to hopefully win your home games and then maybe steal some on the road. We'll see if that holds up, but at this point they're fourth, and that's what the records say. But I think that we will have it all unfold in front of us, and I'm not kind of living my life to get ahead of myself. I want to watch it all unfold.
Well, it's going to be exciting, that's for sure. And 4-2 is not terrible. You'll take 4-2 after six. If they go 4-2 every six games, they're going to be in pretty good shape, right? As this season plays out. Now, I know the defense is good. That I think we all know. I believe this defense can hold these offenses to about 24 points a game. Can the offense score 27 points a game against those teams? You know, can the Bears' offensive line hold up against these defenses? Can they run the ball against these teams? These are the questions that I'm worried about. I think the defense can do their part. Can the Bears play complementary football? Seems to be like the crazy word everybody likes to talk about. You know, can the Bears offense complement the very good Bears defense?
Good questions. They're the right ones. It's fun to look ahead and consider where they are in the best division in football. I don't know if anybody's going to hold the Lions at 24 points. I mean, that offense is just too good, and Ben Johnson is really too smart. Jared Goff is having an MVP-like season, and I don't care if he is doing it indoors, as a couple texters have pointed out. Wait till he gets outside. He's good. He's on one of those kind of roles, confidence-wise and otherwise, and they have, you know, look at their running backs. The Lions' offense is the best unit in the NFC North. The Bears defense should take that as a slight and try to be the better than that. That's the point of comparison that you want to have. What is the best unit in the NFC North? Probably right now it's the Lions offense. The Bears defense can challenge themselves to be that group by the end of the season, and it is fun to consider. But you're the Bears, and you have not earned the right yet to look ahead. Frankly, you haven't earned the right to be compared to the other three teams in your division ahead of you. You are on a path. You're headed in the right direction. The arrow is pointing up. Nothing has changed at Halas Hall because of what happened in the NFC North on Sunday. What's happening at Halas Hall is they're getting things together and they're making progress, and they are doing so by focusing on themselves, and that's got to be the focus moving forward. Who cares right now if this is that, this is the what they should be saying inside House Hall. It's great for us to talk about. It's a tremendous conversation in Chicago. But at House Hall, who cares what the Packers, the Lions, or the Vikings did on Sunday? You're 4-2. You have not had a playoff victory in so long. You are not a winning team since Matt Eberflus arrived. So you need to take care of business. The Washington Commanders are next, and that is all that you need to be focused on right now.
Yeah, I'm not talking necessarily about a pick six or something like that.
That's the voice of Brad Biggs. 7 o'clock this morning is Biggs time. Did the Bears catch a break with the Commanders losing their rookie quarterback, Jaden Daniels, to a rib injury Sunday, given the way Marcus Mariota played in his place? Do you wonder if the Bears hired the right OC? Is that one of the many questions to be resolved next week in Washington?
Well, it's a fun matchup on a lot of different levels. You've got Caleb Williams going home to his hometown where he attended high school and grew up, and that's fun. You've got Matt Eberflus versus Dan Quinn. Dan Quinn was a finalist. Matt Eberflus got the job, and Dan Quinn's doing a pretty nice job in Washington as second go-around as a head coach, and they are playing well on both sides of the ball. You got Cliff Kingsbury versus Shane Waldron. Right now it's an easy thing and conclusion to reach. Boy, Cliff Kingsbury's doing great because he has got Jaden Daniels playing at a high level before the injury, and look at Marcus Mariota picking up and not losing a step offensively. A lot of great matchups, a lot of fun things. I don't know that it's an advantage necessarily that this Jaden Daniels injury occurred. Certainly he is playing at a high level and was before the injury, but there's not that big of a step down to Marcus Mariota. Marcus Mariota is a veteran who, again, for a couple games in a row, he can be and resemble the player he was when he was drafted so high out of Oregon, when he was the Titans franchise quarterback. That seemed like a long time ago, but there are glimpses, and you saw it on Sunday, where he will show you why he is still valued in the National Football League. So, yeah, I want to see Jaden Daniels versus Caleb Williams, but I wouldn't exhale if I'm a Bears fan because Marcus Mariota is going to be the starting quarterback. He can still hurt you, and if they doubt that, just wait.
Can the game be flexed back on, like, Thursday if Jaden Daniels is ruled out and it becomes a noon kick and all of a sudden Tony Romo and Jim Nance are doing another contest? It would be disappointing after all this hype, and obviously we're part of that hype. But, I mean, the question is going to always be there in my mind. Like, why wasn't Cliff Kingsbury hired? You know, was it because the head coach didn't want his replacement in the building? Was Cliff Kingsbury not interested in working with Caleb Williams? Was Caleb Williams not interested in working with Cliff Kingsbury? Which part of that, how did this not come together? It looked like such a natural fit, and that's going to be a storyline. Did the Bears catch a break? If Jaden, listen, Marcus Mariota is not as good as Jaden Daniels. And unfortunately, if the Bears beat Marcus Mariota and the Commanders, there'll be people out there saying, well, we still don't know how good the Bears are because they didn't go against Jaden Daniels.
Yeah, you know, I got to tell you, I think that it sets up for a great game either way. I don't think you need a Jaden Daniels to make this a good game. I think that it's going to be a good game no matter what. It's the Montez Sweat revenge game. So we want to see
There's
that.
Another one.
There's another story. There's another connection. Yeah. So I think that there's a lot to like about the game. I won't be brokenhearted. Dan Quinn said after the game that there'll be more tests today. I believe Jaden Daniels' mom came out and said he's fine. Everything's okay. The x-rays were fine.
Dr. Mom
said he's okay. Put a Band-Aid on it. But no, I mean, we'll find out if he's able to play. I suspect he'll be able to play and that he'll have a flak jacket on or something. And, you know, again, it's good stuff. I think, generally speaking, and I know this has changed a little bit, you get a field goal for being at home. And I believe that the Washington Commanders are favored by 1 point. And it's a home game for them. So that's interesting. That means if the game was in Chicago, the Bears are favored by one? Oh, okay. Bears favored by one. So that's pretty good. I mean, the Bears are a winning team, and and the quarterback issue is at least there's nothing. All should be healthy. We'll get injury updates later in the week for the Chicago Bears, and we'll find out. There's still some questions about some guys. If Jaquan Brisker is able to play, how the secondary is going to look. It's important to have all your players in place, given the issues that you had with some of those injuries going into last your game before the London game before the bye. So I'm all for it. I think it's kind of fun. It's going to be good regardless of who can play a quarterback, as long as Caleb Williams is there.
Coming out hot with the hot question, but
after another double-figure performance, has Lonzo Ball put himself in a position to be counted on as a rotation piece as the season begins on Wednesday? Where is your confidence in Ball?
I believe that he is a rotation piece every other game, or as long as they're not back-to-back, or within the minutes limitations, within the 16 minutes that he will be limited to in the games that he plays. So I think the plan is to go into the season and to have him as a rotation piece, but obviously a limited part of the rotation. I think it's going to be very interesting to see if that is determined to be impactful in terms of something that would interrupt your kind of rotation, right? I mean, if you want your second unit in there for longer, is that gonna change the flow of what you do if you can only play him 4 or 5 minutes at a time? So I think it's just because of the injury, because of the return from it, I think it's something that we're going to have to monitor as they go on with their season. But at this point, I do think he's part of the rotation.
Oh, definitely part of the rotation for sure. I guess the question is he like the first? Like, is he your first option off the bench? I mean, they've got so many guards on this team that they're everybody's like 6'5", 6'6", and they're all guards. It's crazy. But the other thing from the other night, would they shoot 50? They 53 3-point attempts. Right, the Bulls. He can make a 3-point shot. Mm-hmm. The Bulls have been desperate for a 3-point shooter, and I think that's another part of this, that he can do that, and they need that desperately. So I'm excited about this.
I'm stunned by this because this whole preseason has been a eye-opening experience in watching the Bulls and seeing how far Lonzo Ball has come. I will continue to be amazed by what we're seeing here and what he's come back from. You don't want to ever take that for granted. But if they are going to be in a position to count on him and he's part of this rotation, it does change the way you view this Bulls team. Maybe this season. They shot more threes in the preseason. I know it's only the preseason, but the only other team that shot more threes than the Bulls on average, the Boston Celtics. They have transformed the way they play. And they've done it because they trust a smaller lineup. DeMar DeRozan is gone. They're not celebrating that as much as they're embracing the opportunity to change their style of play. Patrick Williams, Zach LaVine, Kobe White, Vooch. You look at their starting players, and they all have the ability to hit from three-point land. Josh Giddey being probably the shakiest shooter. You bring in Lonzo Ball, he's a 40% three-point shooter. Io can hit the three. Julian Phillips has shown a propensity to hit the three. This is a three-point shooting team. You got to make them if you take them, but the Bulls are changing the way they play. It's kind of exciting. Very curious to see where this goes, and a ton of respect for Lonzo Ball and the way that he's changed the narrative.
You know how? That's a great question.
That was the voice of Coach Bielema. Illinois beat Michigan to move up to number 20 in the AP poll. Award for the biggest W in Brett Bielema's tenure is a real reality check awaiting the number 20 Illini against now number 1 Oregon. Does it matter? How high is the ceiling for Illinois, and what other games stood out from this weekend?
First of all, I am Mr. I hate throwback uniforms guy. Always, traditionally, I hate, you know, the novelty uniforms thing. I loved Illinois' uniforms on Saturday.
They were cool.
I have to say, the Red Grange throwback stuff. It was just amazing what they look like, the leather helmets. And you know what? I think they played that way. They played like a throwback, good old-fashioned Big Ten football team. They ran it down their throats. They played tough defense. They hit you into next week. This is a Brett Bielema team. This is what happens when a coach stays at a program long enough to make his presence felt and to put his impression on it. Illinois is dangerous. I don't know that they can beat Oregon. I mean, come on. Oregon is high-powered. It's a tough challenge. It's on the road. All the things that are excuses or reasons why they may fall short. But they still can accomplish something very significant this season in terms of this being a turnaround-defining season. The Big Ten is very interesting this year. Indiana beating Nebraska stood out. Notre Dame taking care of business against Georgia Tech stood out because they needed to do that to hold serve, so to speak. There was a lot of fun stuff with the Georgia and Texas game, but Illinois made the deepest impression on me. I watched most of that game, and it was a statement.
Yeah, CBS really embraced all of that nostalgia, right? They were dressed, the broadcasters dressed up, and the making of those helmets, that was pretty cool. If you didn't catch that video, that's something to spend a couple minutes on. They did look a lot better on the players than they looked in the promotion of the uniforms. I agree with you, David. They look good. I thought it was great that they beat Michigan. The other game that stood out has to be Georgia and Texas, and kind of called for it. Like, oh, get the Manning, you know, get Manning in that game if things aren't going well. Well, he got in and got his bell rung and fumbled the ball. You know, Georgia's defense looks, you see, Georgia's offense, not so great. They can run the ball, of course. Quarterback, totally overrated, doesn't do anything for me. I can't imagine him leading a team back if they were down by like 10 or more. But the defense is really good, and really disappointing the fans of Texas throwing all the beer bottles and water bottles down in the field, and then they reversed the call. That was just absolutely a wild game. But how about the Big Ten? You can't figure it out. I mean, USC went overtime with Penn State. Penn State wins. Northwestern beat Maryland, like thumped Maryland, and then Maryland beats USC. I mean, it's just there's a stat out there about if you go two time zones, if any of these teams move, like I think one team, and I think it might be Penn State, has won traveling two time zones. So it doesn't look good for Illinois. They're going to have to travel two time zones.
They're like a 21 plus point dog.
Wow.
This is the first time in 17 years they've played the number one team in the country. I believe that one was in Columbus, and the Vegas people apparently feel the same outcome is coming. I mean, 21.5 point dog? That means, and I guess the over-under on the game is like 54 points, which means Vegas thinks they're going to lose like 37 to 16 or something. That's crazy to me.
It's a blowout.
That's a blowout. So they're supposed to go the multiple time zones to Eugene and then get spanked for their efforts. That's kind of
get
the
Nike
idea.
Gift bag on the way out.
Yeah, maybe they can go to they'd have to go to, where is the
Beaverton, Oregon?
Is it in Beaverton? I think it was. I thought there was an outlet store in Portland.
There might be.
I don't know. But my goodness gracious, that is madness. I think Illinois has been great, and I hope that they can pull it off. I listen, Oregon's excellent. There's no way around it, and it's a tough place to go to play a game. But really, I mean, you're just coming off you got one loss on the season, and that's at Penn State. You played them close in a game that you weren't supposed to be in, and now you're going to go get blown out in Oregon? I think they can cover. I don't know if they can win, but I'd like them to cover in that game.
Wow, that's a good question.
That's the voice of John Heyman. He'll join us at 9 out in L.A. with Juan Soto essentially having one of the clutch at-bats of the postseason and hitting a home run that helped out the Yankees getting to the World Series first time in 15 years. How surprised are you that SpotRacks estimate that Soto now will command 12 years, $500 million plus free agency deal? Knowing that, Cubs, are they in or are they out?
Well, unfortunately, it looks like they're out. They haven't really been mentioned as in. 12 years, $500 million. I guess if you're going to give anybody a 12-year deal, you want to – I guess he'll be 26 by the time you sign him. But you are going to pay top dollar for the prime years of this particular player. And I got a feeling you're going to get some really excellent prime years from this particular player. He'll get the money. He'll probably get the money in New York, and I would imagine he'd get the money with the Yankees after that at bat and the home run that he hit to end that at bat. That was I watched that pitch by pitch breakdown on the MLB Network, and it was unbelievable. He was just waiting. He was going to wait that guy out until he threw him a fastball. And that's exactly what he did. And he just kept fouling off everything thrown until he got the fastball and he just drilled the thing. And it was, I mean, it was one of those things where because there was backspin on the ball, it looked like the outfielder thought he was going to catch it. It was a no-shotter. I mean, the guy had no hope. That thing was long gone. Three-run home run in the 10th inning. Just an incredible, a booming homer from Juan Soto. And when I say he's going to get paid in New York, if the Yankees don't pay him, the Mets will. Seems like that's the kind of thing that would be the kind of big move that you could see the Mets owner make. He seems to like to make some attention-grabbing moves. I just don't think he's going to wind up in Chicago.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I mean, every Cub fan knows they need a star on that team, but 12 years, $500 million, it's ridiculous. It almost makes me like ill, honestly, like to fathom it. But if the Yankees win the World Series, I mean, he's staying in New York. Now you're right, Mully. The Mets owner might go like over the top by $100 million just because he has it.
Maybe.
And he can do it.
Or maybe the Dodgers do if they beat him. If they beat them. If he beats them. Who knows? Juan Soto, if they win this World Series, will have two World Series championships by the time he's 25 years old. And he will be a big reason for both of those seasons.
Yeah.
So the money, by Major League Baseball standards, as absurd as it is, will be considered money well spent. Smart investment. I don't expect the Cubs to get in the mix here. I don't think that anybody outside New York will. It would be awesome to consider, and it is difficult to comprehend, but Shohei Ohtani signed for $700 million based on the fact that he's a pitcher as well. We don't know if he'll pitch again, likely will, but that jacked up his price. You're paying basically for a two-for-one. Juan Soto alone as a hitter and a fielder likely will easily clear the $500 million threshold because he's 25. And he will seek a, you know, double-digit years in terms of a commitment. So, not crazy to consider. That was one of the best at-bats you're ever going to see in the postseason. He got the best of Hunter Gaddis, who tried and tried and tried.
Yes.
But you just got the sense that it wasn't going to happen. Juan Soto goes deep. He's going to get rich. He's already a rich man. But you wonder if he can stay healthy. You hope that he can. And somebody's going to pay him that money. Somebody in New York. It likely will be the Yankees.
Terrific question. Need to get that answered. Don't have it for you today.
That's the voice of Bruce Levine. And over the weekend, our guy Bruce reported that the Astros will shop Josh Hader. He's got 4 years and $76 million due to him. Bruce also said the Cubs will show interest if it's at $19 million a year, with potentially the Astros chipping in salary as well. How much should that option be for a team that blew 26 saves?
Well, if you're the Cubs, you have to have these conversations with closers if they become available. Nobody wants to pay a closer that kind of money because it violates some of the tenets that the Cubs try to follow. That said, what this says to me is if Bruce is hearing this and he's reporting this possibility, the Cubs are committed, or at least in theory, they're going to approach this offseason somewhat differently. And they've got to. You can't cling to the conservative approach. You can't be that team if you want to get back to the postseason, where you have to get a star, you have to get all-star players at certain key positions. They don't have an all-star closer. I don't know if I trust them to develop one. So I found this very interesting. Yeah, I would take a gamble on Josh Hader if the Astros are going to pay half his salary. That would be a worthwhile commitment and investment because they would bring him to the manager who knows how to use him.
Well, just like I said for the last question, everybody knows the Cubs need a star, and everybody knows the Cubs need a closer. I don't think the closer is on this team right now. Now, I don't know if Josh Hader's the guy. Has he been figured out? And again, how much does the manager like Hader? What is their relationship like? Because obviously he's going to have a big say if that was to come to be.
Well, I mean, the question is this guy kind of falling right into the sweet spot for them, right? They got the manager, you know, whether he wants him or not, he knows him. They got a team that could certainly use him. I think his familiarity with Wrigley comes into play. Isn't he? He was something like 20-0 in one-run games in Wrigley, or I mean, some ridiculous statistic out there. I mean, you gotta get help in the bullpen. If this guy is available and they're eating half the money, why wouldn't you want him? Because he no longer can go multiple innings? I mean, I think you take him on and you use him the way the manager wants to use him, and you hope that their relationship is strong, and you laugh all the way to the bank because you're getting a commodity that you might have been willing to pay for at a significantly reduced price. And you need him.
You paid Hector Neris $9 million to light fires.
Yeah, that. And what did he do?
He lit fires.
Yeah, he did not do much.
Hector, heart attack, Neris.
Yeah.
See ya.
I'm with you. Well, he's long gone. I'd take the guy on, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
I would too.
Yeah.
Sounds good to me, Dustino. I don't care what anyone else thinks, for God's sake.